So hard name, but it worked out. So we go back to a system which is pretty old, now more than 100 years in use, and I will show you some modeling results. As you might know, I already showed some modeling results in the last years, but still there's some discussion about how these suction cups will work, and I hope that I can show the people that they have to use them carefully. Like this. Suction cups are widely in use in a wide range of applications from agronomy, forestry, but also in the plant protection registration procedure. And that's the problem we are dealing with. So how do they work if we put them into the soil and if we sample reactive substances? Actually, they were used 100 years ago already, and there has been a lot of speculation how they will work. And one of the first, and to my opinion, the only one who really looked at the suction cup sampling in more physical way was Art Warwick. So he published a paper in 1977, which was not really acknowledged by the society. So it is already or only cited 35 times within more than 30 years. Yeah, and there was still a lot of speculation going on what happens with the soil, where the soil comes from, and where the metric potential will be changed. So I showed in a paper from 2005 already the same things Art Warwick showed in his analytical solution. So we can pretty hard here. So we can look at the metric potential changes, we can look at where the soil water comes from and where the solids come from. Later on, we published a second paper in 2006, where we looked at the heterogeneity effects of the soil and the variability in breakthrough curves. Unfortunately, we were restricted to steady-state flow conditions and we just looked at bromate breakthrough, so no reactive transport. Jan van der Bok asked me last year, or nearly 2 years ago, do you have also any data for reactive transport and transient boundary conditions? And I said, no, I do not have any data, but he needed these data to convince the pesticide industry not to use the suction cups in the registration procedure. So we started up a new simulation set accordingly to the simulation we did before, but we used data input from the so-called focus scenarios, which were made by the focus working group, and they tried to develop model exercises for the pesticide registration in Europe. So atmospheric boundary conditions were used in these model exercises. We used reactive solid transport and heterogeneous soil, and we generated it by Miller-Miller scaling theory. All inputs were taken from the focus scenario. Overall, we had a... This is pretty hard to do. Where is the mouse here? We had a soil of 1.50 meter depth. We installed the suction cup at 1 meter depth, centrally in this flow field. We have four horizons in the sandy soil, and we added three different substances. One was bromide and two pesticides named A and D with different reactivities. So one is more leaching and the other one is more decomposable. The dispersivity at the low end was set to run about 5 centimeters. We also got some climatic boundary conditions, evaporation and infiltration, rainfall for a 10-year time series. We used the first 2 years to condition our flow field to be independent of the initial conditions, and we added the substances once a year on March 31, and the amount was 1 kilo per hectare, and we did three simulations, one for each substance, so three model runs. We accounted for decay and sorption, but we did not look at the metabolites. Actually, there are different ways how to operate the suction cups. One is the tensiometric controlled method, and the other one will be the constant suction applied to the suction cup. We use both methods, and for the tensiometer controlled, I did a simulation in a 10-meter flow field, and I calculated the mean metric potential at 1 meter depth, and I added an offset of 30 centimeter to the cup and applied it to the suction cup. Actually, we also looked at the minimum suction we can apply to the cup, and this was 1,000 centimeters. The other operation mode was a weekly sampling for 1 day a week, and we applied a constant suction of 600 centimeters. Before we can go to the results, we have to look at some normalization we made to compare the different operation modes and also the breakthrough curve with 1D simulations. And therefore, we first defined the suction cup sampling area, which delineates the surface where the water comes from and will be extracted to by the suction cup. So it's the total water infiltrated, net infiltration, at over a long period divided by the total water extracted by the suction cup multiplied by the infiltration surface. In the next step, we normalize the water, which will be the sampled water at a certain time step divided by the suction cup sampling area. And finally, we define the leach mass fraction, which is the mass applied to the surface divided by the, the mass sampled by the suction cup divided by the mass applied to the surface. And this will be multiplied with the infiltration surface divided by the suction cup sampling area. Okay, here we go to the results for the permanent sampling. So permanent offset of 30 centimeters, 10 centimeter controlled suction cups. In the upper right figure, you can see the bromide below the concentration for pesticide D and then concentration for pesticide A. We did 10 realization of the flow field, and you can nicely see that there's a slight variability in bromide, and the bromide breakthrough is a little bit faster than the 1D simulation is. Not surprisingly, we have differences in dispersivity, pore water velocity, which is due to the physical chemical properties of the pesticides. But we see that we have a higher variability in captured mass for the pesticide D and A compared to bromide. And this variability is around about 30% for bromide, but already 80% for pesticide A and more than 160% for pesticide D. Actually, that's just half of the truth, because the total mass is not the indicator we are looking at. We're looking at the mean concentration. That's the interesting part. And maybe you sample less mass, but also less water. And therefore, I calculated the mean concentration. And it's also pretty variable. It's 15% variability in mean concentration for bromide, more than 70% for pesticide A, and 150% for pesticide D. Okay, if we look at the different operation modes, and this is plotted over here, in the upper row you see the constant suction applied to the cup, and in the lower row you see the weekly sampling, we see more or less the same result, less data points in the weekly sampling because we just sampled once a week, but the timing is more or less the same. The peak concentrations are more or less the same, and mass is not the same, but the mean concentration is relatively comparable. So I plotted, or I just calculated, the 1D mean concentration for bromide, the mean concentration for the 2D heterogeneous case, and this was done for constant and weekly sampling, and we see for bromide is 87 for the 1D simulation, 90 microgram per liter for the 2D, and 93 for the 2D weekly sampling. And this is more or less the same also for the different pesticides. So that's a good result, because we do not need any more these sophisticated tensimeter controlled units, which cost a lot of money. So just go out in the field, sample once a week, and you will get more or less the same results. So if we compare the weekly and constant sampling, we slightly have lower pore water velocities and a decrease in variability for the weekly sampling. The total mass will be only half for the weekly sampling, even if we just sample once a week, but we sample a larger amount of water and therefore solute. The suction cup sampling area will be only half for the will be only two times higher or half for the weekly sampling. The variability in sampled mass is comparable between the operation modes, and also the variability in the leach mass fraction and the mean concentration. So if we look at a longer interval, and here I simulated time of 10 years where we applied 8 times the substances on March 31, and we see 8 peaks for the bromide, but we just see 3 peaks, major peaks for the pesticides in the lower panel. And this indicates that the breakthrough highly depends on the climatic conditions of the application. So if we have a relative wet soil, and this is already known, then the pesticides drain much faster. There's less degradation and sorption to it, and therefore we have these extreme high peaks, which are in the order of 30 times higher than the background peaks for the other years. The mean concentration is 4 times higher for the bromide compared to a single application, and the mean concentration is 134 times higher for pesticide A and 50 times higher for pesticide D if we do a repeated application over several years. And the variability in the mean concentration is much lower compared to the single application. So if we sum it up, the pore water velocity varies only slightly between the realizations. The total sample mass varies strongly between the realizations. There's a large variation in total sample mass for the pesticides. There's a large variation in mean concentration for the pesticides. The good thing is that weekly sampling and permanent sampling is comparable. The height of the breakthrough curve depends on the climatic conditions right before or after the application. And higher mean concentration were observed for repeated applications. But finally, we have a reduced variability in mean concentration compared to the single application. And last but not least, suction cups should be used relatively carefully whenever we deal with pesticides or any reactive substances. Okay.
We have time for 2 questions.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering about if you started it here the first day, and if there's not using potentiometers for solution sampling for pesticides in your hand with it. So I'm still not sure that exactly what the implications are. You know, why not using solution samplers? What are you?
I mean, you can use it, but you do not have to. So this was the speculation made over 60 years. You have to control them by tensimeters to get a good breakthrough curve. But it seems that it does not really affect. So you can sample on a weekly basis, and it will give you more or less the same breakthrough curve. I mean, there are restrictions, so people say if you have rapid transport, then the weekly sampling might be not enough. But then you just go out like every third or second or whatever day and do the sampling.
I'm just wondering what do you mean specifically being careful when using the potentiometer?
Why you have to be careful?
Yes.
You do not have to be careful, but it's just you have to maintain them. The systems break down quite often. Yeah. I mean, it's. You can save a lot of money. Why not you just go out and sample once a week?
Okay. Yeah. How long might it take?
Yeah.
How long might it take for the water and the potentiometer to equilibrate?
Yeah. This is also a question which was raised over the last 4 decades, maybe. But I do not believe that it is important anymore, because you have different sampling materials which do not have a lot of sorption anymore. And if you look at, for example, nylon or PTFE, they are so thin that there's not any delay in there. Yeah? I mean, we are not talking anymore about ceramics, like with a wall size of like 1 centimeter, where you have a lot of sorption, where you have a lot of delay, where you can store water in there. But most of the newer techniques or methods or materials, especially for pesticides, they're relatively thin.
Thank you.